Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Conquest by Toby Neighbors. Narrated by A.J. Jones. Chapter 1. Crawling out of the hole which the polytrots had dug in the side of the mineshaft was more difficult than I thought it would be. My entire left side was on fire, not literally, but the artificial joints in my knee, hip, and shoulder were aching. The muscles around them were quivering with exhaustion, but there was no time for rest. The polytrots were adept at digging, but my trio of marines couldn't just sit back and let the four-legged aliens do all the work. We spent the day hauling dirt and rocks away from the dig site. I'd thought, with our heavy armor suits picking up the video feed from Scout 2, our surveillance drone that was hovering over the butte, that it wouldn't take long to dig our way out. I was wrong. The butte was old, volcanic rock. It wasn't like digging in soil. Sections broke away as the polytrots dug with their cranial shields, which ended in sharp, pick-shaped points several centimeters from the end of their snouts. The rock cracked and crumbled, falling in chunks that had to be carried out from the narrow tunnel. But just as the sun was going down, we broke through. We rested for an hour, waiting on darkness, and then finished the hole. When I stuck my head out, I could see that we were over 100 meters up from the base of the rock formation. Below us was a vertical cliff that ended in large stones. Getting down would be as easy as falling, but I was hoping to avoid that. And it was closer to climb to the top of the butte than climb down. I took my time wiggling out of the hole, finding handholds and then toeholds. I followed the old 3 points of contact rule and slowly made my ascent. By the time I had climbed the 30 meters up to the top of the butte, my body was exhausted and trembling. I pulled myself up to the top and lay there for a few moments. Then I heard Barker grunting as he made his way up. I got to my feet and was turning toward the edge when Barker hauled himself to the top. It was impossible not to envy his strength, agility, and stamina. Not long ago, I had been just as physically capable, but that had changed. To say that I was half the man I had been was an overstatement.
"Well, that was fun," Barker said. "Nothing like a climb in the dark."
"I could live without it," I replied. "Where's Tricks?" Barker slid back from the edge, then rolled onto his belly to look over the side of the butte.
"Almost there."
He reached down and she took his hand. With one smooth motion, he pulled her up to the rock face and onto the top of the butte beside him.
"What took you so long?" Barker teased.
"Shut up,"
Trix said, huffing and puffing a little to catch her breath.
"That wasn't easy."
"Easy is relative," Barker replied. "But you did good."
"What about the polytrots?" I asked.
"They can't make it," Trix said. "We'll have to get some rope and haul them up."
"All right. Barker and I will go down. Trix, you stay up here and keep watch. I want you alert. The orcs could still be down there."
"Yes, Staff Sergeant," she replied.
We took our time going down the butte. In the darkness, our heavy armor helmets could make out the basic details of the rocky formation. We found that the side opposite the small mining camp had a gentle slope down to the desert floor. We took our time and circled around to the buildings that we had sheltered in the night before.
"The orcs sure made a mess of this place," Barker said.
"They certainly didn't try to salvage anything from the looks of it," I said. The buildings of the main camp still stood, but even in the darkness I could see the blast holes made from the new laser rifles the Orcasi troopers carried.
"What's missing?" I asked.
Barker looked around, then shrugged his shoulders. "Their weapons," I said. "I don't see the laser rifles they were carrying."
"So they picked them up," Barker said.
"In every engagement I have fought the Orcasian, across 9 different worlds, they have never picked up their weapons."
"Strange," Barker said. "Maybe that was all they had."
"Yeah, maybe," I said.
I would have liked to take a look at one. See how it's made. I'll be happy if I never see another one again, Barker admitted. Let's get what we need and push on. He was right, but I didn't like leaving valuable intel. My gut told me that it wouldn't take long to dig up one of the laser rifles the orcs had carried into the mineshaft. But we didn't have any time to waste. Our cargo hauler was destroyed, and our main priority once we got the polytrots out of the mines was to find shelter before dawn. We might not look like more than ants from high altitude, but I didn't want to pick up another trail. As long as the Orcasi were watching us, we couldn't return to Havar. It was too big a risk. We went back to the storage building where we had spent the night. Barker had a length of paracord in his pack. I sent him back up the butte at a jog. I could go with him and perhaps help, but it would take me too long to get back up to the rock formation. I was moving okay at a walk on level ground, but hiking up the hill would slow me even more and wear me out before we even started the important task of finding a place to hide once the sun rose. I strapped on my own backpack and picked up Trix's bag. At least we had a little food and water to get us through the next few days. While Barker was gone, I sent the scout drone out in search of a place we could take shelter in. There wasn't much around the butte. It was just wide open desert plains. We would be easy to spot unless we found some trees or a canyon to climb down into. I made my way back to the workshop. The building was barely standing. It had taken the brunt of the attack since I'd fired from there on the orcs, and it was closest to their landing zone. I found my spear. It had fallen over but wasn't damaged. We were lucky the Orcasi hadn't taken all our gear. Normally, they took whatever they could find of ours, but they didn't seem as interested this time. They had left our Nashi sniper rifles in the storage building, along with our backpacks. With the rest of my little team busy, I set to work exploring the Orcasi transports. Their ships had thick armor plating, but we had fired into the open cargo holds where the troopers had been waiting to disembark. I could see the scorch marks inside, along with more bodies and holes in the interior bulkhead that separated the cargo hold from the cockpit. The pilots were slumped over the controls. I took a chance and pressed the button to power up the ship, but nothing happened. Not that I had really expected the vessel to still fly, but I had to try. Just like the dead orcs scattered around the mining camp, those in the ship had no weapons. I checked each one, and even broke into a storage locker. But there were none of the powerful laser rifles the Orcasi had fought us with. I did find some other useful gear, mainly a survival kit with a tarp, water filters, fire starters, and several utility knives. I put the supplies into a bag the orcs had left behind. It was big, but I didn't try to load it with excess gear. The third ship still had power, but a large section of the hull had been cut away to use as shields for the orcs in the mineshaft. Flying it wouldn't be feasible, even if it had enough power to stay airborne. I didn't think the risk of crashing the craft would be worth saving us some foot leather. Besides, if we took the transport, the Orcasi would know we had survived. I was hoping they would believe that we were still trapped in the mine or dead from the cave-in. If they weren't looking for us, we could get back to Havar safely. The beep from Scout 2 was a welcome distraction. I didn't like being around the dead bodies of the orcs. They were my enemy, and yet they were also a reminder of how fragile life really was. It was only by some miracle that I wasn't one of their number. Just another rotting carcass on the empty desert plains of Leonis B. I checked the video feed and saw a shallow-looking canyon. It wasn't as green as most, but Scout 2 detected water. It was nearly 20 kilometers from the butte, but if we made straight for the canyon, we could probably be there before dawn. We could cover 20 clicks in 4 hours if we didn't stop to rest too often. I activated my comlink. What's your sit rep, Sergeant?
On our way down now, Barker said.
Staff Sergeant, Trix added. We're going to need a way to carry Otar.
Roger that, I said, looking down at the big bag I had taken from the Orcassi ship. I've got an idea about that. I took advantage of the time to rest before we had to start our hike. My body was stiff and aching, but I was alive. Pain was just a reminder that I was living. It could be ignored and overcome. With the scout drone patrolling for any signs of danger along our path, I made a careful study of everything around me. The ground was hard and sandy, but not soft enough to leave footprints. All we had to do was get some distance from the butte before the sun rose.
We're here, Barker said.
I glanced over my shoulder and saw Mook running toward me. I turned and bent down, extending a hand to my four-legged friend.
Cho!
Mook yipped. Cho, I repeated, before running my hand down his back.
Trix said you might have a solution for Otar, Barker said.
He was carrying the polytrot, which I knew was heavier than a dog. The bone shield on top of their heads was heavy, and the polytrots had thick muscles along their backs and around their necks to support the wide bone plate. But Barker seemed unfazed by his burden.
I've got a big bag, I said, pointing down at the oversized duffel at my feet. We can use it like a litter.
Roger that, Barker said.
How far are we going tonight?
Trix asked. She seemed more fatigued than Barker.
20 clicks, but it should be an easy walk.
Easy and uneventful would be just fine with me,
Trix said. I nodded in agreement as I handed Trix her pack. With my own backpack and my weapons, I would be carrying plenty of extra weight. But someone had to help with Otar. The injured polytrot had a bad leg, and I, of all people, understood the alien's plight. Barker took one end of the duffel, and I lifted the other. There were wide straps on the ends of the back, and it created a kind of hammock between us that Otar could rest on. Let's move out, I said softly.
Cho,
the other polytrots responded.
Cho,
Barker added. The scout drone took the lead position, followed by Trix and the polytrots. Barker and I had the rear. The next 4 hours were a grueling hike, but I had endured worse. We reached the canyon before sunrise and without incident. Getting down into the narrow space wasn't too difficult either. The sides of the canyon weren't worn smooth yet, which made the descent easier. We climbed down, found a trickle of water, and made our camp just as the sun turned the sky into a slate of gray above our heads.
Home sweet home, Barker said.
It's better than nothing, I said, wishing there were more space at the bottom of the canyon. Unlike the others I had been in, the shallow canyon didn't have rocky overhangs, but it was shadowed, and we spread along the walls, doing our best to stay out of sight just in case a surveillance ship passed overhead.
Do we keep the drone up?
Trix asked. No, I said. Let's charge it.
We're getting low on battery power,
she pointed out.
Do you think it's safe enough to put out the solar cells?
Negative, Barker said. This crack in the ground isn't much cover to begin with.
He's right, I said, and we won't get much direct sunlight down here anyway. We'll take our chances for as long as we can with the power we've got. We couldn't really keep watch, but we did keep someone awake at all times. I took the first 4-hour tour, and Mook stayed awake beside me. It was hard to get comfortable on the rocky ground, but it was still a relief to get off my feet. We said nothing and heard nothing during my duty shift. When Barker woke up, I gladly let him take over. Falling asleep didn't take long, and when I woke up 6 hours later, I felt better. Trix, I said without moving.
Go ahead, Staff Sergeant,
she replied. Anything to report?
Nope, it's quiet.
Good, I said. No news is good news. We sent the drones up out of the canyon just before sundown. The sky was red and gold above us, and I was ready to get moving. Not that I enjoyed long marches, but after lying still all day, my joints were aching. I needed to get my heart rate up and work some blood into the scar tissue on my left side, but before I could even climb up onto my feet, Scout 2 was beeping at us.
"What the hell?" Barker asked.
Scout 2 was hovering just above the surface of the desert plain. In the distance, from the direction we had come, was what appeared to be a pile of rocks. But they hadn't been there the night before, and they were strangely dome-shaped. "We're being followed," I said grimly.
"How?" Trix said. "We haven't seen anything, and we would have heard another ship coming down from orbit."
My blood felt cold in my veins. Fear tried to freeze my brain and keep me from thinking, but I forced my thoughts into order. There was only one reasonable explanation. "You ever heard of an opossum?" I asked.
"A what?"
Barker said. "It's an animal with very little defensive abilities. It's known for playing dead when predators come around."
"What good is that?"
Trix asked.
"Doesn't it just make them easy targets?"
"Most carnivores only eat what they kill," I said. "I have a feeling the orcs following us were at the butte, playing opossum."
"That's insane," Barker snapped. "They were all dead."
"All of them?" I asked. "You checked each one?" The big man looked at me, but it wasn't defiance on his face. He had a look of fear and frustration in his features, which I could just make out in the fading light through his helmet.
"So what the hell do we do now?" Barker asked.
"We have to get out of this canyon, for one thing," I said. "Get started moving and see what they do."
"They'll blast us," Barker insisted.
"They could have done that already easily," Trix said. "We're like fish in a barrel down here."
"Exactly," I said. "If they wanted us dead, they could have killed us. They don't want that. Think like your enemy, Sergeant."
"You mean they're following us to find Havar?" Barker growled.
He sounded more angry and less scared as he considered the idea that he wasn't in immediate danger. I nodded. "They're hoping we'll lead them back to the other survivors."
"We can't do that," Trix said.
"No, we can't. But we can't stop them here. We don't know enough," I pointed out. "We have to watch them. Find out how many there are. See what tactics they're using."
"And then what?" Barker said.
I let the question hang in the air for a moment and made eye contact with Trix, then Barker. I wanted them to know that I was certain of my next order, and confident that we could carry it out. And then we use that intel to kill every last one of them.
Chapter 2 We got to the surface and started marching. It was stressful knowing there was an enemy following us. My mind went over the possibilities. They could close the distance behind us and open fire. That didn't mean they had to be close, either. Not if they were carrying the new laser rifles the Orcassi had developed. But I didn't think that was their plan. Another option was that they were there to drive us into an ambush that the orcs had set up somewhere in front of us. But we were traveling in open country, and they wouldn't have known we would turn north before we set out last night. When they were watching us from altitude before our cargo hauler was destroyed, we had been moving southwest, so they wouldn't have known to leave people in the direction we were traveling, and if they tried to do it, we would have heard their ship. Unlike the cargo hauler, the Orcassi transports were loud vessels. You could always hear them before they came into sight. That left the option I had laid out while we were still in the canyon, which meant that we had to pretend not to know they were there. In the darkness,
The scout drone would fly above us and not risk being seen. Scout 2 was over our heads, rotating so that we knew the Orcasi squad was following us. From a distance, with its night vision capabilities, we made out 12 Orcasi troopers to our rear. They were 4 kilometers back and maintained that distance. They were just close enough to see us moving ahead of them, and I assumed they were using some sort of enhanced visual tech. I had passed by orcs on watch around the camp in the darkness, and they hadn't seen me then. My guess was that they had figured out how to create some kind of night vision capabilities from the scopes on the Nashi sniper rifles that Lieutenant Burrows had left behind when the base camp was overrun.
"It's killing me not to look back," Barker said.
"You must have done plenty of training ops in which you were followed," I said.
"Yeah, but I knew those Marines weren't going to actually kill me," he replied. "It's not like that now."
"Don't let it get in your head," I told him. "Focus on the objective."
"Which is what?"
Trix asked. "To find a good place to take shelter for the night."
"But aren't we going to deal with the orcs following us?"
she asked.
"Eventually," I said. "Right now, we don't have the advantage." "We're outnumbered 12-3, Barker said.
"Not counting the polytrots," Trix added.
"Count!"
Mook yipped.
"Cho!"
Sorge barked happily. "Yes, you all count," I said. "But Barker is right. We're still outnumbered. So we need a way to neutralize their numbers."
"How do we do that?"
Trix asked.
"We need some cover, ideally some high ground," I explained. "We lure them in close, then ambush them before they know what's happened."
"They could still overwhelm us," Barker said.
"Not if they're caught in the open with no cover," I said.
"There's nothing like that out here,"
Trix pointed out.
"We're not even inside of the mountains yet."
"So maybe we find a place," I said. "They're content to follow us for now. As long as that doesn't change, we can keep looking for something that will even the odds."
We walked all night and took shelter under some trees around a tiny spring-fed pool of water. By the time the first rays of sunlight appeared, the orcs behind us were back in their rock camouflage. It was tempting to send Scout 2 back to investigate. I couldn't tell from our vantage point if their camo dome completely covered them, or if it was just a screen. It really wasn't the most convincing camouflage. I didn't think it would ever fool us, even if we didn't know we were being followed.
"Where do you think they picked up that trick?"
Barker asked as we stretched out in the shade of the trees to rest.
"What, the camo?" "Yeah. They didn't use that before, did they?"
"No," I said. "But I don't think they felt the need."
"You think they stole that from us, too?"
"Maybe. But it's doubtful we're the first species they've seen use it."
"You might as well let me take watch," Barker said. "There's no way I'm sleeping knowing they're back there."
"Nope. We all need to rest," I ordered. "This could go on for days, Sergeant. We need you at your best."
"Days," he groaned.
I didn't answer. There was no need. We were stuck with the orcs, and it was probably their intention to make us nervous. If we were exhausted from the lack of sleep, it would only make us easier to follow and kill when the time came. And we didn't need to worry about them overtaking us while we slept. There were 3 of us to rotate guard duty. Not to mention the polytrots, who had finer senses than we did, and the scout drone. If the orcs wanted to fight, we wouldn't be taken by surprise. The day passed without incident, as did the following night. But the mountains were in view when the sun came up, and we made our camp in a cluster of boulders at the bottom of a craggy hill. "Send the drone out to survey the hills," I said, peeking over the rocks back the way we had come. "We have to get the orcs off our tails."
"They might be planning the same thing," Barker said. "They could circle around us while we sleep and set an ambush for us."
"That's good tactical thinking, Sergeant," I told him. "But I still don't think they want to fight us.
Not yet, anyway.
They're a recon team, Trix said, observing and reporting.
If they find Havar, they'll send an army, I agreed.
You think if we take them out, they'll just give up? Barker said.
No, but they'll have to find us first, and that won't be easy once we're in the mountains, I said. Today we rest. Tomorrow we set our trap.
Cho,
Mook yipped. While Scout 2 was surveying the hills that led up to the mountain range, I slept. The drone was finished by the time I was awakened for the middle watch. Sleeping in shifts was always hard. Most people need a solid block of sleep to get the most effective rest, but I rarely slept more than a few hours before the aches and pains of my body woke me up. It helped to be able to move around a little, and there was just enough space in our camp between the boulders to stand up and stretch.
You want me to find a good place for the ambush?
Trix asked, stifling a yawn. She had taken the first watch.
Negative. Get your rest, I told her. I need you sharp tonight.
Okay,
Trix said. Then she surprised me. She reached out and put her hand on my chest. Barker was asleep, and Mook had stirred when I got up, but was lying still again, along with the other polytrots. Trix moved in close to me, our helmets almost touching. Even though she was in heavy armor, I could see the feminine curves of her body. She was younger than me, and worn down by the stress of being followed by the Orcassi troopers. And yet she still looked fresh and eager.
Thank you for bringing me on this mission, she said.
I wasn't sure what to say.
I know it sounds crazy, she went on, but I feel more like a Marine than I have since basic.
You're a good Marine, I said. I'm glad to have you on my team.
Really?
She asked. My back was to the rock, and there was nowhere to go as she leaned forward. I can't say for sure that she was being flirtatious, but it felt that way in the moment. Absolutely, I said, trying to sound official and not too friendly.
I know it's insane to want to be out here, but I needed to know if I could do it,
she explained.
I needed to know that I could face my fears and do what needed to be done.
You can be proud of what you've accomplished. Your sharpshooting at the Orcassi base destroyed their operations on this planet. Trix nodded, but I knew she felt detached from that victory. To own it would mean owning the deaths of hundreds of individuals. The Orcassi were our enemies, but killing an intelligent creature, even an alien, weighed on a person's soul. It was easier to think of it as target practice instead of accepting her role in destroying the orcs in their mining camp, even if her actions had saved my life. She took a small step back, but then looked up at me. In the bright sunlight, we could easily see through our helmets' transparent face shields. I could see the color of her eyes as she stared up at me.
When this is all over, you won't forget about me, will you?
She asked. Of course not, I said.
You're a staff sergeant. I'm just a corporal, but we'll be friends. I mean, even if they send me back to logistics, you'll still speak to me. Can't stand the thought of you acting like you don't know me.
That will never happen, I said. We're bonded by blood. Nothing can break that.
You promise?
On my oath as a Marine, I said solemnly.
Okay,
she said, her shoulders sagging a little as she relaxed.
Okay, I'll get some sleep now.
Good idea, I told her, feeling a sense of relief. It seemed odd to me that Trix would worry about me forgetting her when she was the young Marine with a bright future. Once we were rescued, I would just be another crippled veteran relegated to some boring job no one else wanted until my term of enlistment was up. It was more likely that she would forget about me. Maybe not in the sense of remembering the old staff sergeant who helped her survive being stranded on an alien planet, but in the personal sense. I was not a pretty sight. In either uniform or civilian clothes, I was hideous, with burn scars on my neck and head, an awful black eye patch, and my stiff, lumbered gait. Trix wouldn't want to spend time with me. Not when there were healthy, handsome Marines closer to her own age.
I had...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?